Tango Tango Papa 2115, May 26, 2022.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Joliet, Illinois. So I was a couple of days ago, I was in Las Vegas area, Nevada, Henderson, Nevada. So I picked a load up. I actually brought a load to Henderson, Nevada, and then I picked a load up from the same place that I delivered to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then I picked a load up at Cheyenne. We have a company yard there, and so there was a trailer that was dropped there, and it was already loaded. It came from somewhere else, so I picked that up, and then I brought that to here to Joliet, Illinois. We've got a drop yard here, so I dropped that trailer, and then I picked up another one at the same drop yard, but that doesn't deliver until tomorrow would be Friday the 27th. Delivers tomorrow at 5 p.m. 1700 military time, 5 p.m. in Melrose Park, Illinois, which is one of the Chicago suburbs, and you know, so it's a ways from here. So I'm hanging. There's actually a little fuel stop place that's sort of up the street from where our drop yard is. So I'm hanging out here basically until sometime, I'd say mid afternoon tomorrow. I'll leave here so that try to time it so that I get to the place where this load drops at by 4 o'clock, because the information that I have says that can't get there. They want you to get there an hour ahead, no more than an hour before the appointment. And like I say, the appointment is at 5 p.m. So, like I say, I'm just kind of hanging out right here. I got to the truck stop, I guess it was about roughly six hours ago, something like that. Mid-afternoon, and so I've just kind of hung out here ever since. So decided I'd go ahead and record a podcast. So and then after the load is unloaded tomorrow afternoon, it'll, you know, be into the evening probably. It's hard to say how long it's going to take to unload, but it's, you know, I anticipate they might be done by 7 o'clock or something like that. Then I'll be picking another load up at another Chicago suburb, and then that load delivers to any time on the 28th in New Albany, Mississippi. So it'll probably be late. Probably later in the evening, I'm guessing, when I get there. Originally, they had me, after I unloaded in Melrose Park, I was supposed to be picking a load up at Aurora, Illinois, that was going to Bentonville, Arkansas. However, for whatever reason, that load was either canceled, they unpre-planned me from it. So I think probably the load had been, I think it said it was canceled. So I am supposed to be going home. I told him I wanted to be home by the 30th, so that still gives them a little bit of time, basically to get me from New Albany, Mississippi, home. So they should be able to do that. And it's not really critical this time because I really don't have any appointments set up. So whether I'm there, I could be a day or two later, and it still wouldn't matter. I'm still going to take the time off. Although on the I think the next time that I come home, after this time home, I do have a dental cleaning appointment set up, so that can't miss that. So that I don't want the time that I'm at home, I don't want it to get too far off track. I like to keep everything roughly going home at the end of the month, beginning of the month. That really does seem to work out the best, as opposed to, as I've said before, going home in the middle of the month seems to kind of screw things up a little bit. So it seems to work better for whatever reason, if it's the end of the month, beginning of the month. And I like to keep it at least about three and a half weeks, roughly. Sometimes that can be adjusted a little bit, but roughly three and a half weeks. That rhythm really seems to work the best, and then I take 5 complete days off, and then I go back to work. So, in any case, as I say, should be home and sometime within the next few days, and so I'll go, even though I don't have any appointments set up, I'll go through all of the typical things that I go through, kind of meeting with different friends and what have you, and always enjoy that once every month. So lately we've had, I guess the most recent thing, there was another like a school shooting, and this one happened, I think it was Uvalde, Texas. And I know that there were like 18 kids that young kids that were shot, killed, along with a couple of teachers. And I know that simply, I haven't really watched any reports about it. I've just kind of read about it, like email headlines, news headlines and email, as well as some of the closed caption stuff that I would have captured by when I was in restaurants. You know, they had the volume turned down, you got the closed captioning turned on. So I know the basic details. But I can tell you that I don't really need to know all of the details. Of course, they love to smear all as many, the juicy details as they can either actually come up with or fabricate. And but I, from what I've seen this time, the kid in there, is really a kid that, or a young man that was essentially the murderer, had told people that he was going to do this. And he'd actually written about it. Which, that actually isn't the first time. If you remember the, what was it? It happened in Colorado. What was the name of the, it was like a Denver suburb, Columbine? Yeah, I knew it began with the C, Columbine. The young men that were involved in that had actually written about what they were going to do. But in this case, in this latest Texas shooting, they knew that the young man had mental problems, and yet you know, what they weren't doing anything about it. And of course, my solution to these types of problems really, you know, for one thing, what I would do is reinstitute state-run mental health facilities. Of course, you know, most states do still have some mental health facilities, but the big push, there was a big push in this, like in the 60s and 70s, to really close as many of those state-run institutions, mental institutions, down as possible. And so-called, or you know, the term mainstream, the patients, put them out in society. The idea, well, we're going to mainstream them and put them on different types of drugs or whatever, and they can just live in society. Well, I'm sorry, but there are people that can't. And but the, were those, if you go back into the 40s and the 50s, and, you know, of course, even earlier than that, there, but prior to this, there were always plenty of state-run, government-run mental institutions. There are people that cannot function for whatever reason. They simply cannot function. And it, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter what the reason is. If they can't function in society without being violent, they're a danger to themselves and others. It's, I really do, as much as I don't like the idea of big government and taxes, I really do think that we as a society are obligated to, via taxes, fund state-run mental institutions, government-run mental institutions, and keep these people off the street. I've heard the statistic over and over again, half of the people on the street are actually have mental problems, the so-called homeless people, and so they should be in mental institutions, but yet here they are. They can't function, and they can't function, and so they're just out on the street. So that's one thing that could happen, and that would be a big one. Another thing is the government. We should be encouraging people. Not only the government, but socially, we should be encouraging people, encouraging the the nuclear, so-called nuclear family, intact mom and dad and kids. And of course, it's exactly the opposite as what has been happening. The government, people, have set government policies, and it's gone on now for decades, to destroy the nuclear family. People are actively trying to destroy it, and so we're getting the results of it. These, particularly these young men, are depressed. A lot of them become suicidal, and so then they, in their own words, they'll tell you that the ones that have written about it, the Columbine shooters in particular, they wrote about it. They wanted to create as much, like shaking their fist at God for bringing them into such a miserable existence, create as much misery as they could before killing themselves. And so that's kind of the spirit, if you want to call it that, that sort of takes them over. They're very depressed, suicidal. A lot of them, I'd say, if you check with the, you know, not only the shooting, you know, these so-called mass shootings, but if just the murder suicides that go on all the time, that don't really get, they'll get reported locally, but not all that much. They're happening all the time, constantly, and they have been for years. Murder, suicides, if you check with these, you kind of dig around, you can find out that pretty much all of these people that commit murder, suicide are, or the school shooters, or any kind of shooters, supermarket shooters, generally they are all on antidepressants, so-called serotonin uptake inhibitors. You know, so the idea, oh, you know, you're depressed, here, take this thing and it's going to change your brain chemistry and you won't be depressed anymore. Well, it is a brain chemistry problem, but it doesn't get rid of the problem. Maybe you can take a serotonin uptake inhibitor and it might temporarily make you feel better, but you've still got the problem. And the problem is resentment. The problem is resentment. If you're depressed, why are you depressed? It's because you have resentment. Resentment, you're playing God in your own mind, as if you could, just through your bitterness and hatred, you could, as if you could strike people, places, and things dead with your thoughts. And so typically, if you have resentment, whether you realize you have it or not, you'll either try taking it out on other people, or if you can't do that, then it comes back on the person that has it. And that's all depression is just resentment that doesn't have anywhere to go, and then it comes back on the person that's harboring it. So if you can actually get rid of resentment, and you have to want to get rid of it, but if you can actually get rid of it, you never get depressed. Ever. Depression is not a natural thing. It's not a natural, you know, they'll tell you, oh, well, it's just cyclical. No, it's not. I haven't been depressed in decades. And it's directly because I got rid of the resentment. Resentment, as I've said many times before, comes packaged with its own denial mechanisms. So if you want to get rid of resentment, serious about it, go to my website, truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that... I don't remember exactly how it's worded, but it's it's like a meditation. Click on that. I've got files that are actually hosted on the website. You can play them on your computer, your phone, download them, burn them to a CD, whatever, however you want to do it. And basically, they'll teach you how to meditate. Now, I can't promise that that's going to help everybody, but I do believe that it will help the vast majority of people. But it's up to you to try it. It's up to you to try it, and then if you find that it helps you, it's up to you to stick with it. But you have to have the want to. You have to have the desire to see. And usually that comes about by, you know, you're so damn miserable, and you've tried this and you've tried that. You kind of get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that will... in some cases give people the motivation to change, to really find the answer, and you have to really want to know what the answer is. And the answer is to get rid of resentment, but you have to want to be able to see it, because like I say, it's so easy to deny that you have it or that you're harboring it. But another thing that I've been saying for years, if you really love your kids, you won't send them to public school. And I stand by that. why would you send your kid to a place where some, you know, some sort of atrocity could happen? So-called soft target. Why would you put your kids in that situation? Knowing what I know, if I had kids, which I don't, by the way, I've never had, don't have any kids, never will have. Like to put that out there, front and center. However, knowing what I know, if I ever had any kids, I would do whatever I had to in order to either send them to a private school or best yet, do homeschooling. Whatever I had to do. The function of a parent is to be the environment, to provide the environment for the child that, you know, and the idea is that you protect them. You don't allow them to kind of get into the wrong things. Obviously, you don't let them run out in the traffic. You kind of teach them that there are dangers in the world. You kind of got to restrain them at first, and then you teach them that there are dangers. And then the idea is at some point they can just, you know, kind of leave the nest, fly off, and have their own experience, have their own life. But provide an environment where they can find the relationship with their creator so that they can be self-correcting entities, so they can be able to interact with the world, successfully interact with the world without being contaminated by it. You know, and also without you damaging them or pushing your own agenda off on them. But love, you know, it's just not kissy kissy huggy huggy. There's a place for that, obviously, but that's not real love. Real love is something else. Real love wants the kids to be able to experience their own relationship with their creator. But of course, in order to have that, do you have it as a parent? You've got to have it as a parent. You've got to want to have it. If you can, you have to pursue that for yourself. Then maybe you can transmit it to your kid. Because in a very real sense, your kids are an extension of you. But I really do believe, you know, here's some evidence. If you love your kids, you won't send them to the public school. The public schools right now are an absolute cesspool. So another thing that I was, you know, thought that sort of popped into my head this morning, excuse me, was, you know, you've heard the concept of like a hologram. So, you know, visually a hologram You know, like maybe you've seen a hologram, or, you know, like a hologram, kind of the crappy little hologram that's on some that used to, I don't know if they still put them on credit cards or not. They may still be on some, you know. But the idea is that you can take an actual genuine hologram, and you have an image, but you can break off, let's say you have a piece of that. Let's say it's a glass hologram. You have a piece of it, you can break off a piece of it, and you've still got, you can still see the complete image. And I realized that groups of people are actually like that. So let's say you have a group of people. It could be a country, for example. You know, or let's say America, you know, American. Someone has been, you know, kind of raised in a particular part of, let's say, a particular state. Like I was born and raised in Kansas. Okay, so that's why that you can take like me and then other people that were born and raised in Kansas or maybe even surrounding states, and you're probably going to get a similar type of not necessarily personality, but similar types of views, how we look at the world. How people speak, certainly. What people value. I'm going to be talking a bit more about values in a bit. So you can take an individual, let's say that it's, you know, kind of Kansas or Oklahoma, Nebraska, etc., or even Arkansas. Take it, you know, pick one of those individuals so as sort of a representative, and you're probably, if there's a good chance you're going to find someone that, you know, if you pick the right one, you're going to find that there's a good chance that that's going to be representative of the whole. And I'd say, generally speaking, although there's going to be a bunch of variations, generally speaking, you could take any American and sort of at random and probably get a good idea of what, you know, American personality's like. Or Italian, or Russian, or British. Etc. So, you know, so you have the idea that all the little pieces are, you know, within each one of us, let's say we're Americans, within each one of us there's or Canadian or whatever, Mexican, where, you know, we've got a small representative of the country, you know, the area that we come from, the country that we come from, the nationality that we come from. But I really do believe that a lot of that, you know, how we look at the world, of course, is based on our values. What are, you know, and how we see the world literally depends on what we hold sacred. It's not just our values. What, I think a better expression of that, a better way to express it, is what do you hold sacred? What do I hold sacred? And what I hold sacred may not be what I think, because I might say one thing, but yet what I really hold sacred, I might not be completely aware of. Maybe not aware of it at all. Maybe I hide that from myself. That's why I believe that it's instead of kind of believing in what I say, what I like to do, is examine my own behavior. Because behavior tells the more complete story. Behavior, how you actually behave in the real world, sort of reveals what you hold sacred. And so when you go from one group to the next group to the next group of people, they may hold completely different things sacred. And a thing that you hold sacred, they may scoff at. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't, but they may not hold the same thing as a sacred thing. And when I say sacred, it's not necessarily, I don't mean a religious thing, although I kind of do, because the way our minds work, as I've talked about quite a bit, is our brain sort of builds models, simulations of the world. We build these models of the world, the physical world, but then the social world. We build these models, and then but those models are based on what we hold sacred in a very literal sense. And of course, resentment, and that's the one thing that every human being has a problem with. Every single one of us really throws a monkey wrench into that into the structure. Resentment actually forces you to care about whatever it is you resent. You become what you hate, or you rebel and you try to be the opposite, but either way, you're not what you could have been in the absence of the resentment. But if you really want to understand other people, you have to find out, or really try to find, just determine, what do they hold sacred? What do we have in common that we hold sacred? But the models that we build, these simulations that we build of the world, the models that we build of the world, they're sort of functional models. They're not perfect. At best, they can be quite functional. But, and then we put our faith into those models. But obviously, it's best if the models are, in order for the models to be accurate, we have to have the right values. And it goes back to, what do you hold sacred? And you could say, well, I'm an atheist. I don't have, blah, blah, blah. Well, it doesn't matter. You're still holding things sacred. You still have the same mental structure. You still have the same brain structure. Your brain still works the same way. You still hold things sacred, and you're still building models of the world, and you're still putting faith into them. Some people hold science sacred. The idea of science, they hold sacred. So then the scientists become sort of like the priests, in a sense. So it's really useful to understand whether you whether you say, whether you want to believe in God or not, you say you do or not, doesn't matter. It's really, you need to understand that, you know, how the mind is structured and how it works, and really try to dig and find out what do you hold sacred. What, and then if you're trying to let's say you're trying to really understand another person, what do you hold sacred? And then you can, what, and if you really think about it, if you can be good friends with whoever, they can be very different, have different lives, but you can still have friendships. And the best friendships are based around what do you hold sacred. And again, it's not necessarily what, you may not even be able to put your finger on it. Another person might be able to see that more than you can. But it's revealed by your behavior. How do you behave? How do you react? But then the other part of that is we go back to the resentment. You got to get rid of the resentment. Now, a lot of people won't, you know, and if they don't, then that's their problem. But I know one thing, I don't want to go through, you know, a miserable existence, decade after decade, you know, harboring resentment. Makes for a really miserable existence. So, the other thing, you know, the Chinese city, I think the Chinese city of Shanghai is, for some time now, has been in a continuing lockdown, even though they don't really have any. They have almost zero COVID cases. They're continuing to lock people down. They actually warned them sometime back. They warned them that they needed to have a period of storable food, at least 3 months. I think 3 months worth of food. The Chinese government actually came out and told them, you need to have this food and you need to have this stuff stored. And but now they've had this lockdown, and they've been in lockdown now for some period of time. And I don't know how many of the Shanghai citizens did what they were told as far as storing food or whatever. But then you've got these people in completely like white uniforms, or, you know, they're like white suits basically, and they with white hoods, and it cover, you know, with masks, and it covers, there's only like a sliver of their, where their eyes are, or you can actually see their face, or part, a little portion of their face. And, you know, it's kind of creepy, and there's videos of it, and there's, you know, still images you can find. You know, they've welded people into their buildings so they can't get out. You have people committing suicide. You're wondering, well, you know, Shanghai is a giant industrial area. It's probably one of the largest cities in the world, to like 27 million people. Why would China do that? And of course, the theory was, well, they're trying to hurt the United States. No. I was watching this video, and it was a Chinese woman that now lives in America, and she said she had perfect explanation for it. It's an experiment. They're experimenting with social control. Apparently, Xi Jinping sort of wants to go back to the Mao Zedong form of social control. So you remember Chairman Mao, and they had this, what was it, the something revolution? It was like a social revolution, or I'll think of the term in a bit, people's revolution. I'll think of it here in a second. But in any case, cultural revolution. We're going to have this cultural revolution. And so China, you know, it was just insane. Just look that up if you want to discover what the insanity was with the Chinese cultural revolution. It was just unbelievable. So, of course, China relaxed that. And, you know, and then for several, you know, for quite a few years, they became more capitalistic. And they were actually able to leave the country and travel and what have you. But Xi Jinping wants more social control. He wants to kind of go back to more of the Maoist social control. So this gal was saying this is an experiment. They want to see how well this works as a form of social control. Keep the people locked up in their apartments. And apparently it's working. You know, so do you want to be socially controlled? And of course, that goes back to sort of bullying, and it really originates in the wrong side of the human ego. Every damn single one of us, there's a line. The line between good and evil runs through every human being. Every one of us has a capacity for good or evil. And the wrong side of our ego can actually, if we're not careful, it can end up taking over. It's raining, I'm going to have to close my windows. Okay, I got the windows closed. It's coming down. It's not terrible, but it is, things are getting wet, so. But getting back to what I was talking about, the line between good and evil runs through every human being. It's not, you can say, oh, Hitler's evil, or this person's evil, or that person's evil. Well, yeah. What about you? What about me? What about the people around us? You know, we have this idea that we would all be Arthur Schindler, you know, the Schindler's List. We'd all be Arthur Schindler, and we wouldn't be the ones that were you know, working in the concentration camps and what have you. I have news for you. Yeah, you would. You probably would. I probably would. The idea that we're, you know, so good and that, you know, we would not do that is kind of ridiculous. If you were around in the 1800s and you were one of the, you know, one of the wealthy people in the 1800s in America prior to the Civil War, do you think you would have had slaves? There's a good chance you probably would have. And you would have probably maybe you would have thought it was bad, or maybe you would or maybe you wouldn't. Chances are you would have done it. Because that was the kind of the social norm at that time, and you know people want to fit in. And then we go back to what I actually was talking about before, the holographic idea. Because the line between good and evil runs through every one of us. Therefore, the group, it runs through it, you know, it runs through the entire group. It's like a magnet. You know, you take a magnet's got a north pole and a south pole. But, you know, you break off a piece of the magnet, you cut the, you know, cut the magnet in half. You take that piece and you think, well, where's the North Pole and the South Pole? Well, that piece still has a North Pole and a South Pole. It's holographic. You can cut off a little tiny piece of the magnet, and you're still going to have a North Pole and a South Pole. So that's essentially why, you know, we love to complain about the leadership and how bad the leadership is, how bad this particular politician or that particular politician is, but we won't look at ourselves. That's why we have, you know, there's, the Bible talks about it, you know, before you pull the splinter out of the, you know, your friend's eye, you or someone else's eye, you take the log out, or see if you can get the log out of your own, extract the log out of your own eye. We have to start, you want to start cleaning up the world, you got to start with yourself. And it really does start by getting rid of resentment. So, anyway, I have a couple of voice files that Joel sent today. I think they add up to about roughly 11 minutes worth. I haven't listened to them, so we're going to be listening to them together. So, here is Joel.
Ew, Tom. Sorry, I had to stretch there for a sec. One thing I kind of came across I think it was on Facebook, somebody shared this, where I guess it's to be fairly low carb, I guess, and it depends if you like pickles. Not really something you can do on the truck, but I guess you could probably try and make them ahead of time. But what they did was they took like a muffin tin, and then they sprayed the bottom of it with like, you know, some Pam or something, and then they put some shredded cheese, then a pickle. I guess they said they dried it off. Maybe that's why I didn't do, and that's why it didn't work. I don't know. But then on top of that shredded cheese, you put a pickle. And then on top of that, after you dry off the top of the pickle, you put some more cheese, and then you bake it for about 15 minutes in the oven till the cheese gets crispy. So, and I suppose if it releases, like in my case now, I have an old muffin tin, so it didn't really release very easily. But I suppose if it released easily, you can probably make them things ahead of time. To me, it'd probably be okay to eat cold. Probably better hot, but at least the cheese kind of gets crispy on it, which is kind of nice. And I've heard of people frying the cheese in a fry pan. So that's kind of relating back to the chaffle discussion you had a while back, which I have made them before. But then, of course, you know, I was going through Walmart the other day, and some enterprising Chinese, definitely probably a Chinese company, started making chaffle makers, which is just rebranded waffle makers. But I've done chaffles before. I think what I might do next time I go over to Sam's Club is I might pick up a big old bag of shredded cheese and some eggs and maybe make some up ahead of time. That way I can just either pop them in the microwave or heck, probably could even eat them cold too. Because the eggs really, I think eggs just they're kind of the binder for the cheese because the cheese will kind of get all weird if you just did cheese, but those things are pretty flexible. You can put pretty much anything in it. I bet you. I bet the one I bet would be good is if you got some Sam's Club. I think Walmart has them too. They have these things they call steakies, which are essentially slices of ribeye, all kind of compressed into what kind of looks like a patty. And it's raw. I mean, it's and it's flash frozen. All right, then you just will heat it up and cook it in a skillet, and then I guess you can cook that like ahead of time at home. And then when you're on the road, you probably can throw that in the chow hall, and that would be good. So just trying to think of a little bit lower carb things to eat. Those are good. I've also taken, this is actually another one. I don't know how the well this would keep if you made them at home and then like threw them in a Ziploc bag, but take like a pepperoni. Like I would get like a bag of the Horbel Cup and Crisp, and then lay them out on a paper towel, and sprinkle that with some. I usually do a little garlic powder, a little oregano, and some Parmesan cheese, and then I microwave it about 15 seconds at a time until they crisp up into like a pepperoni chip kind of thing. So that's a thought too. So I've done that before. I also have gotten Jimmy Dean makes an egg witch, which is eggs, like two frittatas on either side. They're used as the bun. Then you have some cheese and some sausage in the middle. Those are pretty decent too, from the low carb standpoint. But I guess you can make the frittatas yourself too and use those as like a bun for a hamburger or something. But or the chaffles. Chaffles will work that way too. So anyway. Hope all's great. Hope you're staying cool. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Joel. Actually, I'm not a big pickle fan. Sometimes I'll eat them. I would eat them, and I still will eat them. Let's say I get stuck and I have to go to McDonald's or someplace like that, and I order the burger without the buns. And I forget to tell them no pickles, hold the pickles, and so it ends up with pickles. And I'll go ahead and eat them. I've told this story before when I was a kid, and I wasn't, I don't remember how old I was at least 10, because I clearly remember it. We had this when I was a kid. At one point we had this. It was like a 65. So I would have been about 10 or 11. 65 Ford station wagon. It was a kind of the big station wagon, the big version of the I don't remember the car names anymore. It was like Galaxy. So it was the big car, but it was the big version of the car, but it was a station wagon. So it was this white station wagon. And of course, let's see. So that was bef it would have been before my youngest brother, if I'm thinking correctly, because the youngest one was born in 1967. So there would have been me and then my brother John, because I was born in 1955. He was born in 1960. So there would have been at least the two of us. So in any case, I remember. Let's say we would go to some sort of like a drive-in or something, and get the burger, at the and it had would have pickles on it. The car back in those days, the windows there was a big gap in the windows, so you roll the window, you roll the windows down, and you could kind of wiggle the windows around. There's a pretty good gap, and so I remember taking the pickles and kind of dropping them down into the door until I got caught. I eventually got caught doing it. You can't do that with modern cars. There's not enough, you know, there's not enough room. You know, the windows don't wiggle when they're down. It's terrible. So anyway, I'm just not a big pickle fan. Now, I like cucumbers. So as you were describing what you were describing, what would happen if you made the chaffle batter? So a chaffle is basically take an egg, the entire contents of an egg, and a half a cup of cheese, shredded cheese, just, you know, kind of exactly a half a cup of shredded cheese and one whole egg, the contents of one whole egg. You mix it up as good as you can, and then you kind of have a sort of a batter. So what would happen if you put that into a muffin tin, and then you'd have to experiment with it, and then bake it for, you know, I'd bake it for so many minutes. You know, you'd have to be careful because you wouldn't want to overcook it. What would you get the bread-like consistency that you kind of get with the chaffle? Wonder how that would turn out if you actually baked it. Because it would probably be a little bit different than, because with the, you know, you put that in the batter into the waffle maker, and of course you got a lot, you got more of the surface area that's exposed to the waffle maker heat. But with a muffin, if the batter was shaped into a muffin, it might be a bit different. Now, of course, you could also, you're talking about pepperonis, you could also kind of, instead of using pickles, stick pepperonis in that. Like you're, you know, a muffin, except you're using the chaffle batter as the muffin batter. You could kind of put, mix in some pepperonis, you know, like a little batter and then some layer of pepperonis and then more batter and blah blah blah. So I'm wondering how that would turn out. So, you know, there's all kinds of interesting things you could do. You know, kind of experiment. Now, as far as bringing things along in the truck with me, you know, the most extensive thing I'm going to do is just the little waffle maker, and you know, that's about the extent that I'm going to go to here in the truck. But certainly at home, that would be worth experimenting with. You know, how long would you have to bake it, and would it come out kind of like a muffin or not? What would the result be? If you try that, you have to let me know. But I am not a pickle fan. Guess you could do it with a cucumber, but then, you know, you might get weird results with a slice of cucumber. You know, but I, you know. So I don't know. That's, but it's interesting if you think about, you know, the different combinations you could make. You know, just take the low carb. Now, another idea, and I don't know, again, I don't know how it would work out, but another idea would just be to take, let's say you take a chaffle, and it could be a small chaffle or a bigger one. Take a chaffle and then put the pizza ingredients on top of that, and then bake it until the pizza, you know, the ingredients. Now, of course, you'd have to be careful with the pizza sauce. Depending on how you made it, it could end up being a little carby. Same way with spaghetti sauce. Typically, the spaghetti sauce that you buy has got quite a bit of added sugar. So if you made your own pizza sauce or you found a low-carb pizza sauce, what would happen if you took a, you know, you had your chaffle and maybe you I guess it would have to kind of be cooked enough where it would easily come out of the waffle maker. Let's say you had a bigger, you know, it could be a smaller one, just experimenting, but, you know, so round chaffle, and then put your pizza ingredients on there, the sauce and the cheese and the, you know, pepperoni or whatever it was you're going to put on there, and then bake it for a while or long enough for everything to get hot and to melt. I wonder how that would turn out. That would be an interesting experiment. So, I'm sure someone's probably already tried that. Possibly, I don't know. But that would be, pretty low carb. Certainly, the problem with pizza is not the, generally it isn't the ingredients, the cheese and even the sauce isn't that, you know. The big problem with pizza is the crust. That's where, you know, that's the really unhealthy part. And so if you, you know, come up with a good substitute for the crust, then, the other ingredients aren't that bad. The toppings. So that might be worth an experiment at some point. So, actually, I thought there was a second file from Joel, but actually there was only one. So, my mistake there, there was only the one file. That was, he sent that actually earlier today. So, probably better be cutting this off. I think it's kind of getting a little bit long, so... Anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.